Great. Thanks everyone for coming in today and those dialed in on the webcast. My name is Ryan Flanagan. I'm in the IR practice here at ICR, and we're very excited to have BEN Inc.'s CEO, Michael Zacharski, with us today for a fireside chat. Before we begin, gotta do the requisite legal obligatory reminder, so bear with me. We will make statements that provide information other than historical information and will include expectations regarding economic conditions, effects of legislation, market activity, demand, the expected capabilities, benefits, and timeline for our products, the company's future operations, the timeline for execution of the company's growth plan, and the company's future results of operations, financial measures, and capital spending. These and other similar statements are considered forward-looking, may involve certain assumptions and speculation, and are subject to risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from these expectations. These statements reflect the company's belief based on current conditions, subject to certain risks and uncertainties, including those that are described in the risk factors and forward-looking statements section of the company's latest filings with the SEC. That's a mouthful there.
You should get a second gig as one of those infomercial guys who give the disclaimers.
Right, the fine print. So as a quick intro, BEN is an emerging provider of personalized customer engagement AI. Last September, announced a proposed business combination with DHC Acquisition Corp at a pro forma equity value of $358 million. BEN's AI solutions leverage the power and scalability of AI, supporting clients whose priority is to dramatically improve customer service while driving efficiency in their operations. Michael, really appreciate you joining us. Clearly, BEN is coming to market at a time when awareness around AI is clearly at a fever pitch. Maybe as a jumping-off point, you joined the company in second half of last year, maybe fourth quarter or so. You know, what was it about BEN that attracted you most and, you know, making this pivot to the AI world?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I spent a big part of my career, the last 15 years, in the programmatic advertising space on the technology side. And, prior to that, I worked in the music industry. And so I've seen these societal shifts of how people's behavior, people's attitudes towards technology is changing. And this is one of those pivotal moments. I think everyone knows and has heard that AI is a concept that's top of mind in the boardroom, top of mind at the dinner table. And fundamentally, people are ready and excited about the technology. And so, having seen that before and seeing the opportunity here, it was the right time to make a change. Also, from a technological standpoint, I think a lot of the benefits of what has been solved in terms of real-time bidding, real-time data streaming, compute, load balancing is really applicable here. And there's a lot of room for innovation, thinking about the market. And finally, you know, the BEN team has spent 5 years working on these technologies, developing them, both in a research capability as well as a product development to get the product ready for market standpoint. And finally, you know, the sponsor with DHCA, Chris Gardner especially, is a really solid team. And, you know, for all those reasons, what a fantastic opportunity to be able to lead in the AI space.
That's great. That's great. I really like that phrase, you know, from the boardroom to the dinner table, because, you know, I don't think you can walk into, you know, a meeting here this week where you haven't heard AI mentioned. It's clearly a topic around most households. You know, you talked a little bit about how you got here. Maybe can you talk a bit about the work, you know, that's going on at BEN, you know, right now as we speak?
Yeah, absolutely. So, we are focused on the automotive and healthcare verticals in the conversational AI space, developing helpful, friendly AI assistants, utilizing generative AI. And so we're very focused on making sure we're developing use cases that work for those verticals. So we announced a few of the assistants already. So we have a sales assistant for automotive. We have a medical professional assistant for healthcare. We have an adherence assistant for healthcare, and we have a customer service assistant for the automotive space.
Interesting. Okay, so, you know, there's some really impressive demos on the website that I encourage you guys to take a look at. And, you know, what strikes me is the ability for the product to, you know, engage with you on a mobile device, recognize that user, you know, pick up where you left off when you walk into a doctor's office or a car dealership. You know, this kind of seamless experience that we all take for granted, you know, to kind of nerd out a bit on it a little bit. There's a lot of advanced underlying technology, right? This is just not a simple flip a switch, you know, scenario. Maybe talk about how the team has developed these, you know, what's the horsepower that goes into to developing this the solutions?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, when people think about AI, they generally think about what they know and what they've experienced and what they can see and touch. And on the one hand, we're really fortunate because our AI assistants are a product that consumers can interact with. Mm-hmm. However, you know, what the big LLM companies have put out there is the notion that there's only one way to do AI, that you have to use this big machine that's a large language model, and that machine is going to do all the work for you, and it's going to generate all the information, all the answers. And so on the one hand, you know, that sounds like a fine strategy, but is that a strategy and a solution that's safe for business? Our point of view is that there are other ways to think about generative AI, and we deploy a layered approach. So we do use language models, but we use them for their intended purpose. We stand up our assistants individually for each use case and configure them for each business. And so our platform is designed to quickly stand up these individual assistants. So they are specific to their task and they're really safe. And so rather than build this big machine that you then have to guard against all the possible permutations, all the things that can happen, our approach is very much so using a smaller footprint on the LLM and then utilizing other AI solutions, machine learning, and so forth, and being able to retrieve accurate information, be able to think about solving math problems using the technology, and then bringing that to the conversation utilizing the language model for what it was intended. Take information, make it part of the conversation, make it part of the pretext and context through which you're communicating, and ultimately create a human-like experience, like you said. So a lot of work both in terms of developing the use cases, refining the models, but also really thinking about how do we solve real-world problems and complete the task. And so when you think about most experiences utilizing Generation 1 chatbots out there, it is helpful. It'll get you information, but it's not going to be able to book the appointment at the car dealer or help you filter the inventory. And so to do that, you know, it's actually a more complex technological problem than it seems to be, but it's utilizing layered technologies, also being thoughtful about using the right technology in the right place, right? So another thing about language models is they consume a lot of compute, a lot of electricity, a lot of power. It becomes very expensive to run these systems. So it's all about designing a platform that not only scales, that is designed for concurrency, but also has the right size footprint in terms of thinking about costings, and also thinking about consumer data, thinking about ESG, you know, how is this impacting the environment and so forth.
Right, right. So maybe to dig into a couple of those specific use cases you mentioned at the onset, healthcare and auto, you know, being you know, some of the key verticals that we're working on here. You know, obviously a deliberate choice to go into both of those. Maybe why those, and you know, sort of some of the use cases there, and you know, why these were chosen.
Yeah, absolutely. So you know, it seems like maybe not an obvious choice in terms of the two verticals we chose, but the reality is a lot of the use cases are more similar than not. And in both of the verticals, there's a need for labor, and specifically skilled labor. And I think the pandemic really stretched the health systems where people are still seeing the lack of practitioners that we need. And similar to automotive, there's a lack of skilled labor force. So, you know, that's one parallel. Another one has to do with the use cases. In both situations, you're finding yourself in a big decision. You're buying a car, it's a high ticket item. You may be getting jarring news about your or a loved one's medical condition. And in that moment of time, in that compressed moment of time, there's a lot of information that you may want, and there's a lot of information that you may need, but the amount of time that you have to spend with the practitioner, with the expert, is really, really limited. And it's not necessarily that they don't want to spend the time, it's that they don't have the time. And so you find yourself in this asymmetry of information, which obviously, you know, if you measure it through the lens of customer experience, doesn't provide a great customer experience. You walk away feeling unfulfilled, you walk away feeling, I wish I asked this question, and there's no continuity of that conversation. So the premise within both verticals allows us to really allow the consumer to go through the experience, to talk to a knowledge worker, where we know where the data came from, specifically trained on data, we know where it came from, to have that fulsome conversation and not necessarily do it in public. You know, with our adherence assistant, a lot of times people go to the pharmacy, they get a new medication. You know, do you have questions about your medication in front of your friends and neighbors at the pharmacy? Well, that may not be the best environment to have that conversation. And so you're left going at home. Now you can Google, you can get great information that way, but is it the right information? Is it from the manufacturer? Is it from a trusted source? How do you know that you can trust that information and actually benefit from it? So it's thinking about how to apply those technologies in that space. And then finally, in automotive, you know, we have a great partner with AFG Technologies. They work with 5% of the automotive car dealership market. They also provide a meta technology layer that allow our assistants to complete the task, book the appointment, et cetera. And then finally, on the healthcare side, you know, we chose it additionally because there is more technical complexity there. You have to be HIPAA compliant, CCPA, CPRA, GDPR compliant, so forth. And we realized that if we solve for that technological difficulty and are able to manage the data appropriately and be good custodians of consumer data through healthcare, it's a glide path to other verticals versus an upstream swim going from other verticals to healthcare. So I think it's important to utilize the technologies in the areas where there's job shortages, mm-hmm. utilize the technologies where they can really benefit people and allow people to experience the technology to its fullest potential.
Got it. And you know, as we talk about these two verticals, two things that jump out is, you know, it's a whole lot of personal identifiable information. You buy a car, it's gonna be all your bank details. You know, healthcare, doctors, right? We're talking about HIPAA, mm-hmm. we're talking about, you know, a lot of personal data. That lends itself to, you know, practitioners and consumers are very, very nervous about this. I think every conversation I have off the cuff about AI is, you know, they're going to take all their data and the machines are going to own us, et cetera. You know, high levels of anxiety here. I know Ben takes these issues very seriously. You know, talk about some of the embedded security, you know, some of the options you have for different products that can be pretty fulsome in terms of privacy and data.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, when you talk to businesses that want to deploy the technologies, you're going to hear a lot of common themes around what they're looking for to be able to say yes. And some of those things include, okay, how do I know what this was trained on and can I be certain what it was trained on? So I talk about that a little bit. Secondarily, to your point, Ryan, where's the data going to go? Is there an open internet connection and is this going to improve someone else's model? Is this going to go to a data broker who's then gonna profile the consumer in some different way? Who knows where it's gonna go? And so as we thought about how to bring to market solutions that are safe for business, that complete the task, that are friendly, that are safe, that provide empathy, that give you the time that you need to have the conversation, we realize that it's really important to ring fence the technology. And so many of our customers are looking for solutions where you're able to completely ring fence the technology. So we can use a mix of LLMs, but we prefer using open source LLMs that our team will configure in the lab. We'll make an LLM for a specific assistant, for the specific vertical. So if you think about how do we scale our business, we clone those instances. We're able to replicate them, configure them for each business so each business is different, but the data is not going everywhere. You're not empowering your competitor by using our technology. You're able to maximize what makes your brand unique, what your conversation's unique, what products or specials you may be wanting to put forth, and designing that unique branded customer experience, utilizing these technologies without the worries and headaches of where's it going to go, you know, where did the data come from, where's it going to go, and is this going to be a problem versus a solution?
Got it. Maybe pivoting from the technology behind it to the go-to-market. You know, I assume a sales cycle for something like this involves probably some pretty heavy demos, you know, some data collection, some troubleshooting. Maybe just walk us through, you know, approaching a customer, you know, how we get started. I know there's a big land and expand motion here because from what I've seen, people see this and they go, wow, it's an aha moment. Mm. And then, all right, let's start layering everything else and let's get all systems integrated. Maybe talk about a typical engagement here.
I mean, you know, people usually see it and they have that, you know, call it excitement, eureka moment. You know, Zoom provides a unique perspective because you kind of get to see how people interact in the room. And it really is that. People get excited and like the creativity starts to flow. And that's where, you know, boil the ocean becomes a thing. So we try to be really focused. And the way we designed our platform and the way we designed how we engage customers is following, like you said, the land and expand. But we want to start with a use case that's going to solve a problem where we can measure the results with a customer that they can validate to themselves, to their business cohorts, to their company, the value of the technology, and then quickly move it upstream. And so we designed kind of like our pricing methodology, as well as how to start these engagements and what are some of the recommended easy for us to stand up for the business instances of these assistants that allow them to have that test, have that experience, you know, test it internally, think about how they're going to test it externally, and really have a bite-sized approach to demonstrate the value and then quickly scale up and expand. So typically, as we're launching and have designed a first use case, we're then working on the next use cases with customers. They tend to be, I would say, very excited about it. Yeah. And it's all about making sure that we're setting both them and ourselves up for success in terms of building good groundwork and making sure we're clear on what is the methodology of success.
Got it. And when we go into customers like this, is the market typically a replacement? Are you ripping out, you know, like a rudimentary chatbot like you see kind of pop up in the corner when you go to, you know, any type of customer service website, you know, or are you seeing companies that really have no capabilities whatsoever? Is it a mix?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends, right? So in automotive, a little bit different than in healthcare. Healthcare, you typically have larger technology teams and those teams are thinking about, should we be building our own? Should we be experimenting? Should we be using some of these large language models that are, you know, easily and readily available? And our position is that you can do that, that's fine, but is it going to meet your safety requirements? And what is the effort going to be? What is the cost and barrier of entry to have enough skill set, practitioners, workforce, to be able to not just stand this thing up? How are you going to support it? On the automotive side, a little bit different. Typically, car dealers have technology folks, but they're not a, you know, large technology team like you see in healthcare. And so our partnership with AFG, very much so with their technological capability, where they have a platform layer that is connected to car dealers' systems, CRM, DMS, appointment booking, et cetera, that allows us to integrate our AI assistants on top, push data back and forth, complete the task, book the appointment, give you information about the available inventory, get you into the store and so forth. So they're a little bit different. I will go back to your previous question around our go-to-market. We focus on partners that are going to give us access to a market and access to a large consumer base. So in the automotive sense, with AFG, I mentioned they work with over 1,000 car dealerships already. Mm-hmm. They're a trusted partner in that arena. On healthcare, similarly, we're looking for partners that are going to give us access to not one or two hits, but access to multiple products, multiple partners.
Got it. Okay. Taking a step back, a more broad level question here. It seems like every company out there is pretending to be an AI company. You know, hear phrases like AI washing. You know, the SEC has warned us all, you know, not to do that. They're going to be watching closely. You know, what steps are you taking to kind of cut through that noise and differentiate the company?
I mean, you know, if you look at the history of the company, we have AI researchers, PhDs, advanced degree folks that have been working on these solutions and technologies for over 5 years. And I think if you look at the bench strength of Dr. Ko, who's our lead AI researcher and been a pioneer in this industry, you know, he was recently named a fellow in the International Speech Association. He's a world-renowned technologist in natural language and natural language processing. Similarly, Dr. Patrick Nunnally, experienced technologist, signal processing, mixed signal devices. He's most known for his contributions to the people meter at Nielsen. So he's also been experienced and seen emerging technologies and how to use those technologies to measure, to create instrumentation, et cetera. So I think you have to look at the, what have we done? And, you know, we're through and through conversational AI technology playing in the generative AI space. However, it is all we do. It's not a thin layer on top of something else. It's not a pivot from one strategy to another, you know, full through and through conversational AI, generative AI, all the way, all day, every day, thinking about, you know, the opportunities, the issues, the solutions, and how to scale these technologies into the future.
Great. The shot clock's winding down on us here. Maybe I'll sneak in one more quick one. You know, the industry buzz out there around AI is palpable, but there's very few you know, pure play publicly traded AI businesses. You know, I think that makes your journey to the public markets, you know, even more compelling, because you are an immediately investable theme, not just part of a larger, you know, organization. Any thoughts, Dad? Is that the right way to think about, Ben?
I think that's a fair, you know, characterization. It's, you know, one of the reasons why the process we're going through with DHCA and the DSPAC was attractive to us. Secondarily, you know, it's gives us an opportunity as we think about the future and as you look at kind of what our plan is, land and expand. We want to collaborate with more companies, build more use cases, more universities. We also want to look at the market and see if there are other companies that will accelerate growth. And we think that having the public company capabilities allows us to look at the market, find companies that fit what we're looking for in the future, and be able to accelerate growth both for ourselves as well as for the overall market and adoption of these technologies.
Great. Well, I am staring at double zero, so that's a good place to stop. But Michael, thank you for the overview, and it's a pleasure to chat.
Really appreciate it, Ryan. Thank you.
Thanks.